Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian, Episode 11, Take Back Your Data. I'm Daniel Messer. Well, hey there, and welcome back to Cyberpunk Librarian, the show about libraries, technology, and the intersection of high tech and low budget. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian, and I'll be your host for the next few minutes while we talk about all things technological and a few things about taking back your data. So hey, it is good to be back in front of the microphone, and I do apologize if this show is a week late, but I have a pretty good excuse. If you've been checking out my blog recently at cyberpunklibrarian.com, you'll notice that I went to the 2014 Computers in Libraries Conference in Washington, D.C., and I had a blast. I learned a whole bunch of new things, got some great ideas, met some wonderful people, especially those that I've only talked to online. It is nice to be able to put faces to names and actually hang out with IRL. Very cool, but there was a slight snag. So to keep the story short and to keep this podcast as short as possible, too, without wasting your time, I'll just say that on the way back from Computers and Libraries, my flight was canceled out of D.C. Something about maintenance on the plane. In other words, I guess the plane was just not safe to fly. Best that they discovered this on the ground than when we were at 32,000 feet, so I really can't complain too loudly. So I wound up spending an extra day in D.C., courtesy of U.S. Airways, and I'd like to thank them for spotting me for a hotel room and all of that. And U.S. Airways was able to get me back home the next day. However, I had to take a whirlwind tour of the East Coast because apparently flights to Phoenix out of the East Coast were, I guess, all full. And this was bore out because while I was in Logan International Airport, I wound up going from Reagan to Logan to Charlotte and finally back to Phoenix. But while I was at Logan International Airport in Boston, there was a thing over the overhead, I guess the PA, I guess you would call it. You know, the thing that they use to let you know that they're starting to board and the gate calls and all of that. Stating that their flight to Phoenix, which I was not on, I was actually on a flight to Charlotte from Logan, but their flight to Phoenix was in a oversold capacity, and they were looking for people with flexible travel plans and so on and so forth. So yes, apparently flights from the East Coast to Phoenix were at a high premium. So it really threw a wrench in the works for a lot of people, not just me, where they had to make their way back from the East Coast to Arizona in whatever way they could. But I spent time in four different airports and three different airplanes and a total of 10 hours in the air. And somewhere along that line, I picked up the flu. And I'm not talking your average sort of I'm sick for 2 days flu. I'm talking I was down for a week. I missed a full week of work flu. It was horrible. It's the sickest I've been in years. And you might have to forgive me. I'll try and edit things out as I go along here. But I still have a cough because there's nothing better than bronchial infection and asthma. And apparently I have both right now. So I still have a cough. It's pretty manageable. I have coffee here to keep that cough at bay. I might put a little Bailey's Irish Cream in that coffee just to also keep the cough at bay. And hey, it livens up the coffee. So yes, that's why this is a week late. I was going to record the week that I had the flu, but getting out of bed was a bit of a chore. Going up and down stairs made me winded like I'd ran 5 miles. It was a whole lot of not fun. So I apologize for the tardiness, but here we are. We are back with another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, and I thank you for tuning in. So on this episode, we're going to talk about taking back your data, and I'm going to talk about a couple things that I've run into recently that you might have as well in some way, shape, or form. And it comes down to certain philosophies of what is yours when it comes to your computer and the things that you do on it and the data that you generate and use on your computer. And how sometimes it's not always a good idea to put your faith in a service or a company or something like that where things might change, things might go away, They might do something you disagree with, or they just disappear in the dead of night. Sometimes that happens. And then you're kind of left high and dry. What happened to all your data? Well, it's gone, or it's changed, or it's altered, and you had no say in it. So we're going to talk about a couple things there, just a couple things I've run into. Maybe you'll get some ideas out of that and be able to apply them to your own technological life. And, you know, we'll just go on from there. As always, I will have links to everything that I talk about in the show notes, which you can pick up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And I think we'll just go ahead and get started. So when we talk about taking back your data, I'm going to talk about two seemingly unrelated things and how I've run into some issues with them recently, and just kind of brings up some philosophies of what exactly constitutes something that's yours and how do you treat it when it comes to your online life. And the two things we're going to talk about are cloud storage and RSS feeds. Now, I know that doesn't sound related, but in a way it is, and if you'll bear me out here for the next few minutes, I'll explain how they can be related, at least as far as your own data and how it's handled. So, the thing is, when it comes to your data and the things that you trust to other services and companies and things like that, cloud storage is probably the most ubiquitous right now. It seems like there's a cloud storage solution for everything from everyone. There's Dropbox, there's Google, there's all kinds of other things like SpiderOak and things like that. You can get cloud storage with Amazon and so on and so forth. But the thing is, when it comes right down to it, what happens if something changes or that goes away or the service just sort of disappears? Now, that doesn't sound like it's going to be a thing with, Dropbox or Google Drive or things like that. You know, you don't expect those to go away. But then again, we also didn't expect Google Reader to go away either, because lots and lots of people loved Google Reader, and then Google just yanked that service. And that brings me to RSS feeds, because RSS feeds suffered from this fairly recent past where people relied on Google Reader for everything. Google Reader was also a sync for lots of apps on Android and iOS, and then Google just stopped it. Now, that wasn't cool, but in the end, it's Google's call because it is their service. But while it's their service, it is your data. So I'm going to talk about, like I said, cloud storage and RSS and what it means to be in control of your data and why it may not be the best idea in the world to trust your data to someone else and, you know, what you can do about it. Because I'm not just here to complain. I'd like to offer some solutions. That's what we're all about here at Cyberpunk Librarian. So like I said, everything I talk about, I will have links to in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. You can pick up more information there as always. So let's start with cloud storage. And let's start with something near and dear to my heart, and that thing is Ubuntu. I love Ubuntu Linux. I use several different flavors of Ubuntu Linux. As a matter of fact, I just installed the latest bits, 14.04 LTS, today on an older computer I'm running. And it's lovely. I do love myself some Ubuntu. While I'm not a huge fan of the Unity desktop, I do think it's getting better. And I wind up installing a different desktop environment anyway because, oh, my poor computer over here is probably, I don't know, 8, maybe 9 years old. So it's finally getting to that point where, you know, the new versions of Linux are just a little too taxing on the display. And the new Unity desktop effects with their fading and blurring and transparencies are very beautiful on a machine that can handle it. So I tell you about Ubuntu because I have a lot of respect for Canonical, and I do love the flavors of Ubuntu and all of that. However, Ubuntu used to have a service, and I do say used to, and that service was Ubuntu One. Now, it's not shut down yet, but it's coming, and it's coming soon, and they were very good about letting people know that Ubuntu One is going away. Now, for those who don't know, Ubuntu One used to be a cloud storage service from Canonical. And it worked right within Ubuntu, worked within all of the flavors of Ubuntu. You could get clients for Windows and OS X. I know because I used them. And you could get clients for Android and iOS. I mean, it worked everywhere. And it was pretty slick. It was very simple in its nature and its scope. But it worked very well. And I can't remember. I believe it was 5 gigs. I think you got 5 gigs of free storage space. And you could always buy more. So I used Ubuntu One. It wasn't my sort of primary cloud storage solution, but I had some stuff on there. I mean, that's what it's for, and it worked really well. But Ubuntu One is going away. Canonical is refocusing their efforts on other things, and probably rightly so, because right now there seems to be an almost a price war going on in the realm of cloud storage solutions. Google Drive just dropped the prices for their storage, and it's, I can't remember what it is, but it's a very inexpensive amount for something like 100 gigs of online storage. And if you want to check them out, by all means, I'll have links in the show notes. But the thing you got to realize is there were people out there who relied on Ubuntu One for many things, for backup, for, you know, cross computer storage and retrieval. Things like that, and now it's just going to go away, and now they have to find another solution. So there goes your data. I mean, you have to move your data, and you do have a limited time to move your data because Ubuntu One will be shutting down on a given date, and after that, you won't be able to access your data. So this is sort of a thing you will run into sometimes with trusting too much in an online service that you don't control and uploading your data to them. What happens if they go away? Or, in the case of Dropbox, what happens if they change? Because while I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist, and while I am not a huge online privacy nut, Dropbox just appointed Condoleezza Rice to their board. And I don't know, something about that just makes me really uncomfortable. Because I think most of us can agree that Condoleezza Rice just doesn't put forth an aura of government trust when it comes to protecting your data. And having someone who was in her position at the time now being part of one of the largest, if not the largest, cloud storage solutions on the internet, I don't know. Something about that just strikes me as a bad decision, a wrong decision, and a decision that is not right for me. So, not only can things go away, but things can change. And what do you do if they do? Well, this is what I mean about taking back your data. Your data should be yours, and it should be under your control as much as possible. And I'm here to offer some solutions, things that I do and have done that might also work for you and give you more control over the things that are yours. Because quite frankly, we live in an information age. And your information is tied to so much of your life. And it's amazing how many people don't realize this. Because with just a few bits of information, someone can get into your bank account. With a little bit of information, someone can log into your computer. That's why you need to make sure your information is safe and perhaps not stored in a service that you do not have control over. So, let's talk about cloud storage and syncing first, and just some ideas that I've done and things that have worked for me that might work for you. Now, if this doesn't work for you, I do apologize, and by all means, drop a note in the comments or email me at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com and tell me what has worked for you. I will definitely add it into the show notes as alternatives. So, let's talk real simple first. Do you really need a cloud storage solution? Now, everybody seems to think they do, and maybe you do, and God knows I've got a cloud storage solution or two in place. And one of them, I will confess, is Google Drive. However, I don't have a lot of really important stuff on Google Drive. I've got stuff that I want to be able to access in other places. But if for some reason I can't access Google Drive because it goes down for a couple hours or something, it's not going to be a national emergency for me. But think real hard. Do you need a cloud storage solution? Or perhaps what you really need is an external hard drive. For $100, maybe $120 max, you can get an external USB 3.0 1 terabyte hard drive. And it's yours. You don't have to pay a monthly fee. You don't have to pay a yearly fee. You've just got a terabyte of storage space that you can put in your bag or put in your purse or put in your computer, computer satchel or whatever, and take with you. Granted, it's not in the cloud, but if it's always with you, then it is yours. And you're not paying any premium price for this. There's no upgrade fee. There's no yearly or monthly thing. It's yours forever, or at least until the drive fails, which they do, but, you know, backups are a good idea anyway. I carry around a 1 terabyte hard drive with me all the time. It's in my bag, and if I've got my computer, the computer is in my bag with the 1 terabyte hard drive. I have a crap load of stuff on there. Now, granted, it's not in the cloud, but it is just as accessible to me as if it was, because all I have to do is pop that hard drive out and plug it in. Do I have to log into a service? No. Do I have to set up anything special as far as an application or program to access that hard drive? No. I plug it in. That's it. And I think you'll find that if you really think about it, carrying around just a small 500 gig to 1 terabyte hard drive, especially if it's USB 3.0, because that stuff is fast, man. That will do, I would say, 90% of your cloud storage needs, and it's not in the cloud. It's in your bag. It's in your pocket. It's on your person. And it's under your control. So, beyond that, let's talk about something even just as simple, but that does give you an online solution. Do you have a website? And I mean something like a GoDaddy website, something hosted on Dreamhost, maybe Squarespace, something like that. You know, a website where you upload things to this website. It amazes me that people haven't considered that they can upload other stuff to their web storage and be able to access it from other places. And I know that FTP is an older technology, but because it's older, it works really damn well. I transfer so much stuff through FTP, it's probably raised a flag somewhere on someone's radar just because not many people use FTP as much as I do. So when it comes to things like having a website and stuff like that, if you have web space, then you have online storage, which isn't quite a cloud solution. But if you can pull up an FTP program and download whatever you need and then upload whatever you need, and it's always there and available and fairly secure, then that really is cloud storage. It may not be as advanced as Dropbox or Google Drive, but if that does your job, if that does it for you, then where's the issue? Now, I grant you that there can be some setup involved, and FTP does take a little bit of time to learn, but it doesn't take that much time to learn. The other great thing about FTP is it's pretty much available for everything. You can get FTP on Android, I know, because I use one called AndFTP. I'll link that in the show notes. There's FTP clients for iOS. There's FTP clients for everything. So if you have some web space, then you have some cloud storage. You're probably just not using it for that. But you can. And while that is relying on some service, it's a service you're already paying for your website anyway. And chances are, you know, these services aren't going to go away anytime soon anyhow. But, you know, just as a heads up, that's an idea. You can use your web space as cloud storage. Now, going a little bit beyond that, if you want to get more creative, and you do have web space like GoDaddy or Dreamhost, there is a solution out there that I really do recommend. I mean, it takes a little bit of setup. You do have to know what you're doing, and I'll link a tutorial in the show notes. But there is a thing called OwnCloud. That's OwnCloud. And OwnCloud is basically your own personal Dropbox running on a server that you have some control over. Now, I know for a fact you can set up own cloud on GoDaddy because I've done it before, and I would not be surprised at all if you can set it up on DreamHost or something like that, you know, a standard sort of web hosting solution. Squarespace, probably not. They got their own thing going on, but that doesn't mean you still can't use Squarespace for online hosting and online storage. But OwnCloud is pretty sweet. And like I said, it does take a little bit of knowledge to set it up, because one of the things you have to do with OwnCloud is to be able to set up an online database. Now, services like GoDaddy and DreamHost come with databasing solutions. They're called MySQL databases. And OwnCloud uses MySQL. And it's really not hard to set it up, because in the end, all you really have to do is create the database, create a user for that database and a password for that user, and then give that information to OwnCloud, and it kind of does the rest from there. Now, it may not be as robust as Dropbox, but I bet for 95% of the people out there, OwnCloud will do what you want it to do. And it does have applications and services for, as far as I know, all of the major operating systems, Linux, Windows, and OS X, where you can have a folder synced to your OwnCloud, just like you do with Dropbox or Google Drive. And OwnCloud will store anything you want to store, and it stores it on your web space, wherever that may be. Now, with a service like GoDaddy or DreamHost, you can have multiple things running at the same time. I've got two different WordPress installations running on my GoDaddy hosting account, my own personal blog, and of course, Cyberpunk Librarian. Because you can have multiple databases running at the same time. It's not a problem. So you set one up for OwnCloud, and you set up OwnCloud, and now you've got your own cloud-based storage solution that is pretty much under your control. I grant you that it is on servers that you don't control, but it's sort of a better solution than Dropbox in that they're really not going to touch it per se, and you can do more with it, I think, at least in my opinion, because I find some limitations on Dropbox, of course, being like the 2 gigabytes of free space. With OwnCloud, you have as much storage space as you're allowed by your hosting solution. And if you're just running a small website, chances are you're not using all of your storage anyway. You're probably not even coming close. I know I'm not. So look into that if you feel like messing around with a web hosting solution for cloud storage. OwnCloud is pretty easy to set up, and I've set it up a couple times. It's really not hard, as long as you kind of read the instructions and kind of have an idea of what you're doing when it comes to databases. Now, the last two things are kind of interrelated, and I use both. Well, I use one of them. I can't say that I use both. I use one of them, but the second version of it is open source and freely available for everybody. And the first one is also freely available, but not open source. And what I'm talking about is BitTorrent Sync, sometimes referred to as BT Sync. Now, BitTorrent Sync may sound like something out of piracy land or something like that, because for some reason, when people think BitTorrent, they think downloading TV shows illegally, illegal movie downloads, music, and all of that. And while there is more than a fair amount of that on BitTorrent, there is also plenty of legitimate BitTorrent traffic. Whenever I download a new version of Linux or a Linux distribution of any kind, I always use BitTorrent. It's faster. It's always faster. If you download the latest bits from Canonical, say you go get the latest version of Ubuntu and you download it from their website just like you would any other download, It's gonna take some time, even on a high speed connection. It's gonna be something like 5 to 10 minutes, maybe even 15. I can't remember how long it took me today to download the latest one, but I want to say it was 10 to 15 minutes. With BitTorrent Sync, once it pulls its peers, you'll have it in 5 minutes. I can almost guarantee it. So with BitTorrent, it's easy to get big files. That's what it's for. And BitTorrent Sync uses the same kind of technology. However, it creates your own personal peer-to-peer solution for linking folders over the internet and over your own network. And it works like this. You install BitTorrent Sync, which is pretty easy to do. Then you set up a folder that you want to sync. It could be an existing folder. It could be a new folder that you created specially for this. Whatever you want to do. But you set up a folder to sync. And you tell BitTorrent Sync where that folder is and say, I want to sync this. And you can do two kinds of sync. You can do a read-only sync, where basically you can only add things to it if you're an administrator. Or you can do just the standard sync, where anything put into that folder by anyone, anywhere, will start syncing across the computers. So you set up your folder, you tell BitTorrent Sync you want this to be synced, and BitTorrent Sync will give you what's called a secret key. And the secret key is just, you know, a string of letters and numbers. I can't remember how long it is, but it's pretty long. And what you want to do is copy and paste that key onto another computer running BitTorrent Sync. You could email it to yourself or put it in a text file or whatever. But what you do with this secret is you go to another computer where you've installed BitTorrent Sync. Once again, you set up a folder that you want to sync. And then instead of saying that I want to sync this folder, you tell BitTorrent Sync, I have a key. And it'll ask for that key. You put in the key that you just got. And you're golden. It will start syncing those folders over the internet, over your own network, whatever. BitTorrent Sync works, as far as I can tell, flawlessly over the internet. I sync stuff from my Mac Mini here in my office to my MacBook Air pretty much no matter where I am. As long as I have an internet connection, things will sync, and they sync back and forth. So if I save something to my Mac Mini, the next time I open up my MacBook Air, BitTorrent Sync will see that there are new things, and it will start pulling them down. Now, the cool thing about BitTorrent Sync is you can do this with other people. So say you've got a family and you've got some family photos and you all recently went to an amusement park and a bunch of people took photos of the kids and things that were happening. And so you've got maybe two or three different photographers and you want to get all of those photos in one place. Maybe you're going to upload them to Flickr or whatever. Well, you can set up BitTorrent Sync on anyone's computer. And it doesn't have to be yours. It could be your father's. It could be your friend's. It could be anybody's. As long as they have that secret and set up a folder to sync, then that folder syncs. So if you're taking pictures and your dad's taking pictures and brother's taking pictures and maybe your brother's friend was taking pictures, you can hand that secret around. They set up BitTorrent Sync, dump their photos into that folder, and everybody gets them. The great thing about it is, as things propagate and sync out through those folders, anyone who's downloading stuff will start pulling the stuff from multiple peers. In other words, if brother and father have the same set of photos and someone else connects into that folder, instead of just downloading the photos from brother or father, it gets them from both. So that speeds up downloads. And it speeds up how quick it is to sync those folders. BitTorrent Sync is working pretty flawlessly for me, and I use it for probably 90% of everything that I do. If I need something on a different computer, I typically drop it in BitTorrent Sync, and it does its thing. Now, the thing, like I said, is that BitTorrent Sync is proprietary, or at least it's very closed source. So we're not quite sure just exactly how secure it is right now. If you do want that open source layer for better security because there's more eyeballs on it, there is a thing called SyncThing, and that's S-Y-N-C thing. Now, SyncThing is almost exactly like BitTorrent Sync, but it's open source, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Pretty much works exactly the same way. So pick the one you like. I use BitTorrent Sync because it kind of came out first, and I kind of got into the rhythm of using it. But I'm thinking about trying SyncThing. I just haven't had a chance to do so yet. But right there is just a few different ways to take back the data that you would normally send up to Dropbox or Google Drive or OneDrive or wherever, and they get to do God knows what with it. Of all of those, I really cannot recommend using an external hard drive highly enough. I mean, seriously, for just lugging around big files or getting big files from one place to another, A USB 3.0 1 terabyte external hard drive is yours. It's always with you, unless, of course, you forget it, but it's pretty easy to stick in your computer bag. And it's always there. And it's probably faster. I can guarantee you that you will upload bigger files quicker to your USB 3.0 hard drive than it will take to upload them to Dropbox or OneDrive or Google Drive or whatever. USB 3.0 is fast, ladies and gentlemen. I love it. So, just some ideas. Maybe you've got something else. By all means, let me know what they are. But, moving along, we're going to talk about feeds, news feeds, RSS aggregators, whatever you want to call them. Now, after Google Reader went away, which was a real thing for a lot of people, including me, after Google Reader went away, there was this sort of wandering in the wilderness because so many people relied on Google Reader, and then it's just suddenly gone. Well, that's not cool. So a lot of people tried different things. There was the old Reader, which was kind of like Google Reader, but it had some problems with scalability because it wasn't designed for millions of people to just dump on it at the same time. But sort of the one to emerge from the cloud of dust that was the fall of Google Reader was a service called Feedly. And I've used Feedly for a long time. I settled on Feedly pretty quickly after it was obvious that Google Reader was going away. And I like Feedly. I really do. But 3 or 4 weeks ago, Feedly put out a survey at the top of their website that kind of bugged me. It was one of those things that kind of makes you cock your head to one side like a dog who's hearing a very strange noise and doesn't know what to make of it. Because it was innocuous enough. It was a link at the top that basically said something like, you know, help us make Feedly better, take our survey. Well, I've got a few minutes and I do like Feedly and I would like to make Feedly better. I'll take your survey. So I click the link and it takes me to, I believe it was a Google form of all things. And it takes me to the survey. Okay. And then I start reading the questions, and the questions were just that kind of thing where you wonder, wait a minute, what are they getting at here? Because the questions were along the lines of, what would you use as another RSS reader if Feedly went away? What would you do if Feedly no longer worked? Basically, it was questions geared towards, I would assume, Feedly going 100% pay to use, or perhaps Feedly just going away. I don't remember all the questions, and I can't find the link to the survey anymore. If you do know what that link is, go ahead and email me. I'll pop that in the show notes. Because it was just the kind of questions where you knew that something was up. These were not questions that you ask on a, you know, just as a sort of lark. These were questions that you ask when you're really looking at your business model and wondering just exactly how sustainable is it. And that kind of freaked me out because Feedly has been around for a little while, but it wasn't that long ago that Google Reader went away. And I was of the attitude that I am not going to search for another online solution to read my feeds. Because I don't know about you, but I love RSS feeds. I read tons of RSS feeds of all kinds. And losing them again, losing access to them again, I couldn't take that. I didn't want the hassle. I didn't want the headache. I decided that if there is ever a time to start really controlling what my RSS feeds are and where they are and what they do, it is now. So, standalone feed readers have existed for ages, and there's feed readers for all kinds of operating systems. And you got plenty for OS X, Linux, and Windows, and all of that. The problem with a standalone, though, that makes things like Feedly and Google Reader so attractive is that standalone RSS readers tend not to sync to anything. So you pretty much have to read your feeds in one place, or you have to do some clever jiggering of the files to make them sync using another solution. And, you know, for me, that's actually okay. A while back, I bought a MacBook Air, And I kind of stopped using tablets after that. I still use my iPad that my work issued me, and I have a Galaxy Tab 7-inch model that I use for reading books. But I don't really use the tablets for anything other than that. So I found pretty quickly within a day that I really didn't need the syncing capability because I wind up doing most of what I do on my MacBook Air. It's light, it's just as heavy as the iPad 2, or at least it's pretty close. It's a full operating system, it's not sort of a stripped down iOS operating system. It's got a full keyboard, it's got a trackpad, it's an honest to God computer, and I can just do more with it. So I like using it, and it's very fast, and I love it. So I've discovered that I really don't need that syncing capability, and I want you to think about that for a minute. Do you? I mean, if you do read your RSS feeds on anything that you can get a hold of, from a computer to your iPad to your phone to whatever, then yeah, you probably do need syncing capabilities. But think about it. Do you really do that all the time, or do you find yourself reading feeds and things like that in one place most of the time? And could you imagine yourself using that one place as your sort of home base for that thing? And if you can, then you have to ask yourself, do I really need to rely on some secondary or tertiary thing to sync my feeds for me when I only read them here on this device? And that's what I found works for me. So I started investigating some standalone feed readers, and like I said, they exist for everything. Since I use a MacBook Air as my primary machine, I started with OS X. And I found two, and they're both pretty good. And it's one of those where I would just recommend downloading both of them, trying them out, see which one you like better. The first one I tried was Vienna. Vienna is an open source RSS aggregator for OS X, and it's pretty brilliant. It works really well. I like the layout. The keyboard shortcuts had a bit of a learning curve because they're not quite the same keyboard shortcuts that you've come to expect from Feedly or what was in Google Reader. But, really, it's not that hard. You pick them up pretty quickly. So the keyboard shortcuts were sort of the only downfall. I liked Vienna, but I also wanted to make sure that I was, getting something that I really wanted and wanted to use. So I downloaded NetNewsWire, which is the second one. Now, NetNewsWire, that's all one word, capital NET, capital NEWS, capital WIRE. NetNewsWire, I just like a little bit better than Vienna. I mean, really, it is almost a six of one, half a dozen of the other, but I like how NetNewsWire presents the feeds. It's just a little bit better. Really, if I didn't even know that NetNewsWire existed, and I only used Vienna because I was basically in ignorance of the existence of another alternative, it would have been a blissful ignorance. It really wouldn't have been a problem. I do like NetNewsWire a little bit better, so try both. But these are both standalone RSS readers that work really well. And the other thing that I have to point out about a standalone is, as far as I know, there's no priority given to anything. And in Feedly, there is, unless you pay the premium. When, say, Ars Technica, or what's another good one? The Verge updates their feeds, Feedly seems to get that right away. It just pops in there. I've got new information. I've got new stuff in my feeds. I can go look at it. However, when it's a smaller website, something like, say, cyberpunklibrarian.com, that doesn't show up as quickly. And it doesn't seem to show up in the same sort of manner that the bigger news articles do. There seems to be a delay. Now, I can't prove there is. However, I can tell you that when I update my website and the feed, gets updated and goes out there, Feedly takes a little while to get that. And I've noticed it can be up to an hour later. Meanwhile, on NetNewsWire, Vienna, and pretty much any other standalone RSS reader, it pulls it in on the next update. If I've set it to update in 15 minutes, it pulls it down the next update, at most 15 minutes from now. So there doesn't seem to be any priority, and I do like that neutrality because, Yeah, okay, I do love reading articles from The Verge, but if I'm subscribed to a blog, I want to know when that blog updates and I want to see the latest stuff. So a standalone RSS reader does that for you. Now, beyond OS X, there are some good alternatives for Linux. One, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. The one that comes up and that I've used before is Liferea, and that's L-I-F-E-R-E-A. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Liferea is very good. It's very simple, easy to use RSS reader. There is Akregator, that's A-K-R-E-G-A-T-O-R, Akregator for the KDE desktop environment. And there's RSS Owl. Now, RSS Owl is kind of nice in the fact that it's cross-platform. It will work pretty much everywhere. OS X, Linux, Windows, RSS Owl is sort of the thing. If there's a downfall to it, it's not in its presentation or how it works. I've used it before. It's pretty solid. However, there is a downfall for some people in that it's Java. That's why it's cross-platform. It's a Java application. Now, there have been some security holes in Java, and we all know what it's like if we're Windows users to open up the computer and, oh, look, there's another update to Java this week. It might be the second or third update to Java this week. So if you're not into Java, RSS Owl isn't for you. There used to be a reader for Windows called FeedDemon, but this was another reader that was totally reliant on Google Reader for syncing and data. And when Google Reader went away, so did FeedDemon. So there exists alternatives out there, but there's one that I have to give special mention to before we get out of here. It's one that I just started trying, and I think I'm about to abandon NetNewsWire for it. Not just because it's a good RSS reader, and it is a good RSS reader, but because it is totally cross-platform, and it works in my favorite operating system of choice. Now, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, my sort of running joke is, Dan, what's your favorite operating system? Well, it's Firefox. And I found this extension, or an add-on, whatever you want to call it, called Brief. Brief is basically Vienna and NetNewsWire in Firefox. It's an extension that you just pop in, install. You can import a list of feeds through OPML, however you want to do it. And it just sits there in your browser and works. And it looks awesome. And it has basically all of the things you would expect in a fairly decent feed reader. It has the ability to get new feeds when you want it to. I have mine set to 15 minutes, but you can set it to every minute if you really want to. The presentation of the material from the feeds is spot on, very well done. And of course, there's no external browser that you need to worry about because you're already in your browser, aren't you? That's pretty sweet. The other thing that I really like about it is, of course, you need a bookmarking solution. You need some kind of bookmarking system. You may not have time to read this thing right now, but you can mark it with a star. And even if you clear out your feeds, that bookmarked article will remain. So that is awesome. If you're a Firefox user, check out Brief, B-R-I-E-F. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. I've been using it for about 2 days, and I think I'm in love. I am pretty happy with it. And just like any other standalone feed reader, there's neutrality with it. In other words, when a site updates and it checks the feed, you're good to go. It just pulls it down. So that's a really cool one, especially if you happen to be a Firefox user. Check it out. I really dig that one. Now then, before we get out of here, I am going to offer one more sort of tip, trick, whatever. And this is in the form of a website. And this doesn't just have to do with taking back your data, though it really fits in with the idea of taking back your data. And also fits in with the idea of make sure you're getting the solution that's right for you. Because not just with cloud storage or RSS feeds or anything like that, sometimes you need a widget that does X, whatever X might be. And you may have heard of a software solution or a program that does that. but maybe it costs money, or maybe it's not that great. It's just the one that everybody talks about. There's a website that I want you to check out, and I'll link it in the show notes, of course, but you should just go to it right now, unless you're driving a car, at which point you should not go to it right now. You should go to it when you get a chance after you park and are safe. And that website is alternative2.net, and it's spelled exactly like you would think it would be, alternative2.net. Alternative2.net is a great site in that you go to it and you put in something that you've heard of, a software program or an online solution, and it will offer you alternatives to that that may or may not be better, or that may or may not meet your needs just as well for perhaps less money, or perhaps no money at all. So say, for instance, you're looking for a word processor, and you just don't have the money to drop on Microsoft Office or Office 365. You've heard of LibreOffice, because goodness knows I've talked about it, but is that the only thing out there? I mean, you just need a word processor. You don't need anything special. You just want to write some stuff, right? So you go to Alternative 2, and you search for Microsoft Office or Microsoft Word, whichever. And what it will do is it will bring back all kinds of solutions that are similar to that search. So if you do a search for, say, Microsoft Word, it's going to offer up things like Pages for OS X, or LibreOffice for Linux and cross-platform stuff, or maybe Caligra for KDE desktop environments and stuff like that. It's going to offer Abbey Word. It's going to offer things that maybe you've never heard of. But you can also drill down. Say you're a Windows user, so you know the things for KDE aren't really going to be useful to you. So you say, I want things that are like Microsoft Word for Windows. And you'll get solutions that are like that. And, you know, LibreOffice will, of course, be in there because it's totally cross-platform. But you'll find other things, too. And this works for whole bunches of software and online solutions. So if you're looking for an alternative to, say, Winamp, you can go find an alternative to Winamp. If you're looking for an alternative to GarageBand for OS X, you can go find an alternative to that. It'll offer things like Audacity and Ardour and things like that. Things that you can try to see if maybe that meets your needs without, you know, maybe the outlay of money, or, you know, without getting something that you're going to only use 20% of. See, that's the thing. I use Photoshop on a very regular basis because it's part of my job. But the price you pay for Photoshop, I'm probably getting maybe $120 worth of a $600 program. So that's why I use GIMP. But if you don't like GIMP, go to Alternative 2 and put it in, you know, search for GIMP, see what else there is. It finds so many solutions that you just got to try at least one or two of them to see if it meets your needs. And if they don't, they don't, but at least you know you shopped around. You know you got the best deal for your data. Because anymore, data is probably just as good as money, if for no other reason than data will get you money, and data accesses your money. So I really recommend that before you just start socking your data away in a service that you don't fully control, treat it like money. Treat it exactly like money, because if your data goes away, you can't get it back. Same as if you lose cash. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to get back. So treat your data like money. You don't just go into any old bank and open up an account. You do some homework. You look around. You try and find the bank that's best for you. Do the same thing with your data. Look around. If you do need an online solution or a service for cloud storage, find the solution that's best for you. It may be Dropbox or OneDrive, or it may be an external hard drive, and it may be an FTP directory on your web host. In the end, you got to decide for yourself, but I do recommend above all else, make sure you maintain as much control over your data as you possibly can. We'll be right back. So hey, that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in and hope you picked up some ideas, tips, and tricks for taking back the control of your data. Like I said, anymore, data is like money. You should treat it as such. You should make sure that you have as much control over it as you possibly can. And just like you don't drop your money in any old bank, you shouldn't drop your data in any old cloud service. Make sure you're getting the right solution for you and be willing to change your mind if something better comes along. So, as always, if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so via the emails at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Drop me a line. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know if there's something you'd like me to talk about later on or if you've got an idea for a show. I've gotten a couple ideas from listeners, and I thank them very much for that. That's good stuff, and I always like hearing from people who listen to the show. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, I am at Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It's like librarian, but it starts with a B. You can also hit me up on Google Plus at google.com/plusDanielMesser. Yeah, I frequent that a heck of a lot more than I do Facebook recently. Facebook has been pissing me off. So I've been finding myself more and more on Google Plus. So if you need to get a hold of me, by all means do that. Or you can, as always, drop a comment or a thought at the website, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Just find this episode, episode 11, and let me know what you think. Let me know if there's another idea that you have for taking control of your data and taking back that control from services that may change or otherwise go away. The tune you're currently digging on is Future vs. Calculator by Ample Mammal. You can pick up that tune and a whole bunch more just like it and a whole lot more that aren't like it at all via the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. Free Music Archive is great if you need some kind of tune for a project or something like that. They've got great music that you'll never hear on the radio because, by God, it's just too good for radio. You'll hear stuff that's down-tempo, stuff that's jazz, classical, vocal, all kinds of stuff there. So you really need to check it out. freemusicarchive.org. As always, if you do use something for them, you might give the artist a little credit, like mentioning them in the end of the podcast and letting people know that Ample Mammal is some pretty decent down-tempo music if you're into that. As always, the opening track is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita, and that also comes off the Free Music Archive. I'll have links to that in the show notes, but by all means, just buzz over there if you got some time and find a genre you like and just hit play. You'll probably find something you like. In the meantime, you can get a hold of me, drop me a line, totally ignore me. But hey, if nothing else, I thank you for tuning into this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. And before we get out of here, I just want to remind you that you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. ¶¶